Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
My name is Paul Howarth. I'm CFO of a company called Get Busy. This is our first time to Mello, so we're very pleased to be here. Nice to see some familiar faces as well, and it'd be great to meet many of you on the stand later on. Get Busy's mission is to make people productive and happy. That sounds very millennial and lovely, doesn't it? What do? We sell subscription software that helps professional services businesses become more efficient with their documents and in their communication. If you've not heard of us, we IPO'd about 2 years ago. Our origins are within an Australian software business called Reckon. Reckon acquired many businesses over the years and created a portfolio of software products. The document management businesses and a communication business, which was under development at the time, had very different growth profiles to the rest of the business. So it was decided about 2.5, 3 years ago to spin the business out of Reckon and to IPO here on AIM. Fast forward 2 years, we've got 11.4 million of annualized monthly recurring revenue. We've got products with very low churn rates. We've got 65,000 paying users or paying subscribers across our products. About 1.5 million people interact with our products by sharing documents and communicating through the products. And we've got about 128 staff around the world, based in Cambridge in the UK, Houston in Texas, and in Sydney. And as at last night, our valuation, our market cap was about £25 million, which if you strip out the cash in the business is about 2x annualized recurring revenue. Just to explain a bit about our shareholder base, about 30% is held by board and management. We've got BGF, Fidelity, Hargreaves Hale and Herald also on the register. And about 35% is held in smaller institutions and retail, most of which is held currently in Australia and New Zealand through smaller retail investors who receive the shares as part of the demerger. So a quick look through our products. We've got two products in document management and one in communication. So the two document management products, Virtual Cabinet is a business that will do about £8.3 million of revenue this year. That'll be about 10% up on last year. It's a very highly cash generative business. It does well into the 30s EBITDA margins. It'll do about £3.4 million of EBITDA this year, which is about 40% ahead of last year. Smart Vault will do about £4.1 million of revenue this year. That's about 25% up on last year. It's very much in the scale-up phase at the moment, so it's loss-making. It will lose about £1 million this year. And then Get Busy is a very new product. It's just coming out of the public beta phase and into the product market fit phase. We'll incur about £1.5 million worth of investment cost in that this year. So let's look first of all at the document management product. So what problems do we solve? Many of you will interact with accountants, with lawyers, with professional services firms in one form or another. The thing that pulls all of those different businesses together is the volume of paperwork and the volume of documentation that they handle in one form or another. So for an accounting firm, for example, the documents are very much the raw materials in an accounting factory. Our software helps to move those raw materials around the accounting factory between the sort of direct labor force, so the fee earners within those accounting firms, very efficiently, very securely, ensuring that documents, the raw materials, are delivered line side to the right people at the right time in the right way, and then are communicated to clients in the right way and very securely. So take a very practical example of a tax return. You'll all be, I'm sure, familiar with the annual ritual. If you use an accountant, 10 years ago, your accountant would have prepared your tax return or a draft of your tax return using documents that you've emailed to them or you might have sent to them in the post. They'll then print that tax return out. They'll get one of their managers or their partner in the firm to review that document. They might raise some queries on it. You'll have various queries raised around that document. It'll be saved. There'll be various versions of it. It'll be saved in a folder, in a folder, in a folder, somewhere hidden in an accounting firm's network architecture. Once it's ready to share with you, it'll be attached to an email. It'll be sent to you if it gets sent to the right person at all, usually unencrypted. It would then be printed out by you once you've received it. You'd review it. You'd ask questions back and forth. You might have a couple of phone calls. You would then, once it's ready to sign, you would be sent the final version. You'd print it out. You'd sign it. You'd scan it back in or mail it back to the accounting firm. They would then save that back into the tax software. And somewhere along the line, your tax return's probably been lost, or it's delayed, or it's been sent to someone it shouldn't be, or information relating to you has been sent to someone it shouldn't be. So our software integrates very deeply with the incumbent tax software, so very familiar people like IRIS and CCH and those sorts of big tax software providers. The tax return is prepared in the tax software. It gets automatically uploaded to a secure client portal. You get sent a link to that portal. You log into it. You review it, you can communicate around it in a very secure way without using email. And then when it's ready to sign, you sign it digitally, it gets uploaded directly into the tax software and then filed with the relevant authorities automatically. So it's a much slicker process, it's a much more secure process, and it saves accounting firm fee earners, who ultimately determine, their productivity determines the profitability of those accounting firms, an awful lot of time. So we have two document management products, Virtual Cabinet, has just over 45,000 paying subscribers, so paying users. That's an on-premise piece of software that has a cloud portal and cloud mobility products around it to give it effectively a SaaS or cloud-like feel to the users. It's based in the UK. It's got a fairly strong Australia-New Zealand presence as well, and we're starting to see some expansion of that into the US market as well. It's aimed at the larger accounting firms and sort of medium-sized accounting firms, so the sort of names that you would have heard of. And its operational model is very much one of enterprise sales. So we have a very experienced sales team who generate their own leads, who go out on the road all the time, demoing the product and selling to mid-tier and large accounting firms. And that's doing, as I said earlier, 7.2 million of annualized recurring revenue. And that recurring revenue growth is about 16% in H1. Smart Vault has just over 20,000 paying subscribers. It's a younger business. It's been around for about 10 years. And that's a pure cloud SaaS document management product and portal. It was originally based in the US, so the business was founded in Houston, and it's now expanding into the UK. That's really focused at the smaller end of the market, so SME, accounting firms and bookkeepers, the sort of people that maybe individuals would deal with rather than the mid-tier. And that's driven by a very transactional, marketing-led sales model. So we generate leads online by creating educational content to accountants and bookkeepers and hosting webinars and those sorts of things. Those leads are then nurtured through a very sophisticated marketing engine until they're warm enough to pass to an inbound sales team who will demo the product and convert the customer. As I said earlier, we're doing about 4.2 million of annualized recurring revenue in that. And that's a very much a high growth business for us at the moment at the top line. So let's look at these markets that we sell into. If you look at the overall enterprise content management space, which will include products like Microsoft SharePoint and very generic products like Box.com or Dropbox, it's absolutely enormous. But in a way, it's a waste of time showing you this slide because we focus on very specific niches where we can create value. And our largest niche is the accounting and bookkeeping vertical. So within the four territories that we operate in, there's about 1.7 million people who work in those industries. Each of those for us is a potential user of document management products. If you work in an accounting firm, almost in any capacity, you will handle documents as part of your job, almost certainly. And we estimate that to be about a £350 million annual market just in those territories. That market has some very powerful, often regulatory-driven growth drivers behind it. So you'll all be familiar with GDPR last year. I suspect we're the only company here that thought GDPR was a really, really great thing. And it helps us to drive a significant growth in our UK business last year. And we're seeing GDPR-like legislation in many other countries as well, and even in certain states in the US. So in California, there's a very similar GDPR type legislation that's coming into force. But we're also seeing government mandated digital transformation initiatives. So examples would be Singapore and Dubai, where there's a lot of government money going into providing grants for people to install software that helps with productivity of the wider economy, particularly the professional services economy. But there's also the expectation of consumers around what it's like to interact with a professional services firm. So 10, 15 years ago, you might have been happy meeting your accounting partner once or twice a year, handing over a stack of documents and say, come back when you got your tax return. Nowadays, you expect some form of digital interaction with your professional services provider, whether it's an estate agent, accountant, or lawyer. And our products help to provide that. So all of those drivers are helping to push that market forward at double-digit growth rates globally at the moment. So who are our customers? I've talked a lot about accounting and bookkeeping. They comprise about 62% of our paying subscribers across both of our products. The other industries we're in, very allied to accounting and bookkeeping, so very document-heavy areas where there's a lot of sensitive documents, where there are privacy concerns, and where there's communication around those documents required. Selling into accountants is a lovely place to be. So they're very savvy, but it's also a very, very robust and consistently growing sector. You probably noticed that no matter what the change in the world, somehow your accountant is making money out of you. And that's something which benefits us. There's a lot of change going on at the moment. That's very good and healthy for the UK sector. What's great as a CFO is being in a business where no single customer accounted for more than 1% of our revenue at the end of June. So we're not reliant on any individual customer. These are examples of some of our customers for the Virtual Cabinet product. I haven't included SmartVault on here because they're all very small and you wouldn't have heard of any of them. But really, this is a who's who of UK mid-market accountancy firms. You'll also see on here some interesting non-accountants. So Begbiz Trainer, you'll be familiar with, is a large insolvency provider in the UK. And over on the right, there's a firm called Macias, Genie and O'Connell, which you almost certainly haven't heard of, but you would have heard of BDO. MGO is one of the BDO network firms in the United States. So how do we price this? Both models are now sold on a pure subscription basis. Okay, so we no longer sell on an upfront license and maintenance model in almost all circumstances. If certain customers want it that way, it's hard to turn away the cash, but generally we sell on a pure subscription model. Virtual Cabinet typically sells for about £35 per user per month. There is, however, a wide range, and that reflects a number of things. It reflects the complexity of the installation, the complexity of the integrations that that client might want with its back office systems like practice management software or tax software. And it also reflects the size of the client. So we typically see a range of between £15 and £80 pounds per user per month. We very occasionally do some upfront consulting as well, which helps to pay for that initial upfront cost of us installing the software. SmartVault is a pure SaaS model, so very, very little non-recurring, non-subscription revenue in that business. Typically, we sell that for about $30 to $50 per user per month. The delta there will depend on the sort of plan they're on, so if they're on a specialist accounting or tax plan, or if it's a general business plan, and also the payment frequency. So you'll all be familiar with software websites where there's a button at the top you can toggle to either pay annually or monthly, and you basically get a discount for paying annually. The observant among you will note that these numbers are significantly lower in both cases than our average annual revenue per user. And that's really for two reasons. So the first, for Virtual Cabinet, we have a long tail of customers who many, many years ago bought the product on by writing a large check and paying a large upfront license and consulting fee, and then pay an annual support fee. Naturally, they're much lower than someone who's only ever paid us on a monthly basis or on an annual basis. And there's opportunity potentially to upsell some of those. So all new modules we produce are always sold on a per user per month basis. And with SmartVault, that's really a product of many of 10 years of sales trials and marketing trials. And over time, we expect to bring more of that installed base up to roughly to market prices. So who do we compete with? Competitors generally fall into two categories. There are those who are pure play document management providers like us, and there are those who are both competitors but also channels. So what do I mean by that? The people who produce practice management software, so the likes of Iris or Thomson Reuters, will have a suite of products that might be 10, 15 products wide. Not all of those products get invested in. Not all of those products generate significant revenue for them. Generally, document management is a decimal place on their revenue line. It's not something that particularly interests them. There's functionality, which is better than a Windows file structure, but it's not sophisticated document management functionality. So they would much rather partner with a specialist document management provider like us in order to create a much more sticky suite for them as a whole, because so the money for them is in the tax software and in the practice management software. So we have a strange sort of relationship with some of these practice management providers where we both compete, but they also act as a channel for us. So we're sort of cautious frenemies, I think I would say. So where do we win in amongst those competitors? Everyone will say that their functionality is better. And to an extent, everyone is right. There are very specialist areas that people sell into. But really where people win is on the depth and the breadth of the integrations they provide with the other software that these accounting or professional services firms use. So tax software and practice management software, for example. So we have a very wide range of integrations. The depth of those integrations can be very deep or in some cases quite shallow. So we tend to win where we've got the strongest integrations that makes the whole suite very efficient for the users of our software and ultimately means they can have more billable hours to customers and become more efficient. So what's our overall strategy? You could sum it up in one line really, which is to grow a very sustainable subscription business over the long term. But really that breaks down differently for the two different products. So Virtual Cabinet is a more mature business. So it's been around for about 20 years as a business. The product has come a long way since then, but it's still been around for some time. It's a very cash generative, very profitable business. So our strategic objective for that business is to continue to grow that EBITDA line and to continue to generate more and more cash each year. For SmartVault, it's very much at the scale-up phase. If you know anything about SaaS businesses, you have to invest up front to generate customers who then become very, very sticky, and that subscription revenue produces effectively an annuity over time. So our current strategic objective for SmartVault is to grow those recurring sticky revenues as quickly as we can. So what does that look like in practice? For Virtual Cabinet, we'll always continue to acquire new customers. So we have a very ambitious sales team. You can meet the head of our UK sales team for Virtual Cabinet on our stand today. We'll continue to try to upsell to the existing customer base. So we're always bringing out new modules. We've recently brought out a suite of mobility products to give a cloud-like feel to customers out in the field. We'll continue to try to penetrate new markets, whether that's new verticals, such as insolvency, or new geographical markets, such as moving into the US and the wins that we've had with the BDO Alliance over there. But first and foremost in that business is operational leverage. So we will ensure that as much of that incremental revenue as possible drops to the bottom line. Scaling up SmartVault looks something like this. So we'll continue to try to bring on as much new revenue each year as we can. So our ACV, annual contract value, in H1 that we sold was 35% higher than the previous year. We'll always try to bring on new users. So you can grow a SaaS business for a very short period of time just by hiking the price up. That's unsustainable. So we'll always try to bring on new users into the product. It's interesting that the new users we're bringing on come on at a 45% higher price than the installed base. So new users are worth a lot more money to us than the users who are in that installed base. And we try to keep churn rates very low. And this is an ongoing challenge for us to keep those churn rates low. We have very low churn rates compared to a lot of other SaaS businesses, but keeping them low is an ongoing challenge. And we just invested in the customer success team in SmartVault to focus solely on that. We have a very efficient sales and marketing engine currently in SmartVault as well. So overall, in SmartVault, our lifetime value to customer acquisition cost ratio is about 4-1. That's currently being dragged by the fact we're moving into the UK. So the US on its own is at 8-1. It's come down since because we've been investing very, very hard in that area. And we'll continue to find new channels for the product. So you would have seen yesterday morning, we announced a partnership with TaxCalc in the UK. That's really our first significant channel agreement in the UK for the SmartVault product. So let's turn to Get Busy, our new communication product. So what I want to do first of all is just set some of the landscape here. So over the last 20 to 25 years, email adoption amongst businesses has obviously been pretty much 100%. But email and the tools that are used around email, so Outlook, Gmail, things like that, they're ubiquitous tools that are somehow meant to fit the needs of a large investment bank as well as fitting the needs of your local florist. They have very different workflows, they have very different needs. And really what you've got is a tool that no one really likes using, but everyone uses because they just don't really know what the alternatives are. So what you've seen, particularly over the last 5 years, is very specialist applications coming along, carving out very lucrative niches within that wider email ecosystem. So they take something that email has traditionally been used for, and they do it better, and they do it in a very focused and very specialist way. And it's a big enough market that you can still carve out some very nice businesses in that. The biggest example and the most famous example at the moment is probably Slack, which has taken internal team communication and completely turned it on its head compared to email. And really our own products over here, Virtual Cabinet and Smart Vault, have done just that in the document management space. So you used to share documents on email, now you share it securely and much more efficiently through our portals. So really the aim of Get Busy is to kind of find our niche where we can carve out something that email did and do it better. So what does that look like? So Get Busy is a task-based communication application aimed at busy teams. So it enables a team leader to create a team, each of whom will have a Get Busy account. They can then create tasks within the application. They can communicate around those tasks. They can attach documents to those tasks and organize those tasks in a very intuitive and human way and communicate around those documents in the sort of way that you'd communicate, say, on WhatsApp. It's a way that increasingly people in business like to communicate, and people certainly working internally in business like to communicate. I'd recommend, if you're interested in what the product does, come to our stand. We've got a working demo there. You can play with it. You can set up an account if you want and just see what the product does, and we'll demo it to you. And we're very much at the early stage of this. So earlier this year, we started to emerge from a public beta program. We're now emerging into the stage where we're ready to try and find how this product works, so product market fit stage. So what does that mean in practice? SaaS products, if you've been around SaaS businesses, go through a process of trial and error over sometimes many months to many years, trying to find how to get scalable growth. So what does that mean for us? We are currently in the position where we're trying to find which subset of people find our product indispensable. And we then need to find a way to attract those people into the product at a price that makes sense, given the price that they're prepared to pay for the product. Sounds very simple. It's a constant process of trial and error. And we're right in the middle of that at the moment. So people often say, when are you going to start selling Get Busy? It's for sale at the moment. You can come into the product, you can buy it, you can subscribe to it. When does it actually start generating meaningful revenue is really an unknown. If you added up those months at the bottom, you get some error bars that are quite large there. So we're investing a very specific amount each year to try to find product market fit for the product and to identify whether we've got a product that is scalable. So let's look at our results and forecasts. So I thought I'd get it out of the way straight away that we use an adjusted profit or loss measure. Usually I hear a load of sighs at this point in the room, but I'll just explain why we do this. So we are a cash absorptive business at the moment. We're burning cash each year. So cash flow for us is a very important metric. We've got a cash runway which we need to work within. So this is our attempt to create a profit or loss number, which is as aligned to cash as it can possibly be. So we exclude any capitalization of development costs. So it's a pure sort of cash development number. We exclude non-cash share option costs, which arguably should be in or out. But we also include all costs relating to leases. You'll be familiar with the new changes to leases, which have played havoc with people's EBITDA numbers. So this is an attempt to get back to a cash-based number. So the numbers in red are the current market forecasts. What does that mean? That really means our housebroker Liberum's forecasts. We're expecting to see sustained growth in revenue in Virtual Cabinet and in Smart Vault. So Virtual Cabinet is penciled in to do 10% revenue growth this year. Smart Vault is penciled in to do about 25% growth. The percentage of our revenues that are recurring in nature will continue to grow. So we're no longer focused on non-recurring revenues like upfront licenses or consulting. We still do a bit of that, but will never go away completely, but our focus is on generating subscription revenues. And you can see that over time, our adjusted loss before tax starts to come down as well. What's really pleasing for us is we are choosing to invest in sales and marketing and in Get Busy, the product. So we know from experience during the course of this year that we can have profitable quarters if we choose to do so. And in fact, at the moment, the challenge for us is investing quickly enough to capitalize on the scale-up opportunity in SmartVault in particular. Just to quickly run through the cost base, always ask people what's in their gross margins when you're dealing with software businesses. No one will give you the same answer. You could just get their answer. So within our cost of sales are the fees associated with having certain integrations. So specifically here, our integrations with the Intuit suite of products in the U.S. for SmartVault. About a quarter of our cost of sales relate to actually running the product, so hosting the product in Amazon Web Services. And the remainder is around credit card fees and some other ancillary costs that we have of running the product. In terms of our sales and admin costs, about two-thirds of those are our staff costs. You can imagine a business like ours, staff and rent really and marketing are where most of the costs go. And the rest of SG&A is really split between commissions, premises, costs of actually running a business, so software and IT and that sort of thing. And most of our development costs are in-house staff. So we occasionally outsource pieces of work, but generally speaking, most of our development is done in-house and the majority of it in Cambridge in the UK. Quick look at our balance sheet. We have some capitalized development, as you would expect, but that all happens below that adjusted profit line. Really, our balance sheet is around working capital. So we have trade and receivables, particularly for the UK business, where we have annual renewals of licenses. We've got about just under 2 million of cash at the end of the first half. And on the bottom half of the balance sheet, we've got trade and payables and accruals and that sort of thing. And then deferred revenue, which mainly arises on annual subscription contracts, whether that's in the U.K. Or in the U.S. And you'll see here, talks about leases there, you've got effectively a nonsensical matching asset and liability on the balance sheet as well. So keep a lookout for that when you look at other companies at the moment. So what's the future look like for us? Well, imminently, we hope to be announcing, as we trailed in our first half results, a potential share register rationalization. So I talked about this long tail of Australia and New Zealand shareholders that we have, many of whom are very, very, very small indeed. The cost of their dealing often exceeds the value of their holding, which is nuts. And we're looking at a way to help them to exit whilst also bringing more shares over into the UK market to promote liquidity. Our trading update goes out in January. Results will follow either end of February, beginning of March. And then we'll have our AGM this year in early May. We're just on the point of moving into new premises on the outskirts of Cambridge as well. So you'd be warmly welcomed up to there to come and see our new offices. So in summary, we're a business that has a very strong base of recurring revenues. So approaching 90% of our revenues are recurring in nature and very sticky. So we have low churn rates in both of the products. We've got opportunities to upsell in the existing client base. And if you take our document management products and put them together, we've got a business that's growing about 19% in revenue and has an operating margin that's approaching 20% or move beyond that over the course of the next year or so. We're fortunate to sell into a very stable and growing market, and we've got a very resilient customer base. So our priorities, Virtual Cabinet, continue to grow recurring revenues, but also to see a lot of that drop through to the bottom line. SmartVault will be to scale up recurring revenues, and Get Busy will be to continue that process of finding product market fit, listening to customer feedback, pushing out updates to the product every fortnight or so, and building out an operational infrastructure around it to try to turn what is a product under development into a business. Any questions?
What's your total development R&D cost forecast for this year, and what's the split of that between capitalized and written off?
Great question. Okay, so we'll do about 2.5 million of development over the course of this year. The truth is, I don't know how much of that will be capitalized because it's a process you have to go through at the end of the year. Our tendency is probably to be towards the lower end of our peers, so I would have expected something in the region of £500,000 to £600,000 of capitalized development this year. As I say, we don't focus on that as a business. It's our focus is on the cash number, and then we sort of do the accounting later, if you see what I mean.
I'm an accountant in personal tax, and my firm uses the CCH software that you describe. I don't recognise the document handling problem that you describe, but I do recognise irritation from clients who have to create logins for single service.
Absolutely, yeah.
Single service, you know, document sharing applications.
Yep.
Do you not find that a very simple Dropbox account solution is what clients are actually in the account, you know, in the tax profession are actually looking for rather than a standalone one?
So first of all, I recognise that issue. I think we probably all do, where you get sent I work in this industry and I get sent a link to something that isn't one of our products and I sort of sigh and wish I didn't have to log into something new. It's absolutely a problem that's out there. For us, the fix to that is to make that process as slick as possible for the end customer. So to make the provisioning of that new guest user easy for you as the accountant, and then to make the end process as slick as possible. So whether that's a very simple single sign-in, Dropbox actually creates almost the same issue, because what you're creating then is an open link which isn't necessarily secure for the end user. So we do see a lot of bookkeepers in particular sharing Dropbox links. It's better than sending something on email, absolutely 100%. But what Dropbox doesn't do is integrate into CCH or something like that. So you'd have another stage in that process. But that end user adoption, absolutely something that we have to focus on.
Can I take a second question? Yeah. What the developments from HMRC side, so digital tax account, where you can now download information on a client directly from HMRC into the tax return, and making tax digital, which has started in VAT and will be moving to other taxes soon, which is effectively going to cut out an awful lot of document moving back and forth between clients and accountants. How does that affect your business?
It's a great question. So we think ultimately it's favourable, but then there are downsides as well. So I think overall it's neutral. So the overall digitisation of that process, we 100% support. And what you're seeing is businesses like Receipt Bank would be a great example, who are springing up, effectively scraping data into a repository. But the actual requirements from HMRC then around, if you like, the evidence and the support around that doesn't fully go away. So there's still that need for documents around. So you're talking solely about tax there, but there's engagement letters, there's audit work papers, all that sort of thing, which ultimately needs to be held digitally. So I think the improved tech adoption, improved digitization of that workflow is helpful to us. There's definitely some questions around then, well, what's the quantity of documents that are held? Really, that doesn't matter. There will be some. And that's what we do. And we partner with the likes of Receipt Bank to help with that as well.
Is Virtual Cabinet basically a secure way of accessing those documents?
Is that the core benefit to the
accountancy firm?
Yes, it is. It's also around workflows as well. So it's not just a document store. If you needed a document store, you know, there are document storage solutions out there, like even sort of Google Box and things like that would suffice for that. So it's about document storage, document access, and then workflows around those documents as well. So that might be, for example, incoming emails would be routed to the correct folder for that client based on domain name or based on previous history of you, and then there'll be sort of suggested responses and a suggested primary actor on that email from within the accounting firm. So it could be that all emails from a client are directed to the partner or to the manager on that particular account.
So what about legal as a sector? It's 5% of your client base. They deal with such vast amounts of sensitive documentation.
So legal is an interesting sector to us. It's also a highly competitive sector. So much more competitive than the accounting and bookkeeping space, and presumably because legal is very, very document driven. The volumes of documents there are so much greater. It's just a much more advanced sector. What's interesting is you don't see many people who have, say, a 25% share in accounting, 25% share in legal, 25% share in insolvency. They tend to be very strong in one area and then have some other more minor strengths in other areas. So I'd love to say it's an area we can easily go into, and in theory that works nicely. The reality is, you know, to get the right integrations, have competitive edge over incumbent products, which are, you know, very strong in that particular sector as well.
On your cost side, there was a lot of integration share, and you mentioned Intuit, I think.
Yes.
Do you have to pay royalties or you for every installation to the big accounting companies like software companies like Xero and Sage,
etc.? In most cases, no. So most software companies, like Xero is a great example. They have open APIs. The whole point of their existence is to partner and integrate with as many different people on their marketplaces as possible. They do one thing really, really, really well, and they understand other people do their things really well, so they try to encourage that. The relationship with Intuit is a long one in the US. I'm talking specifically about SmartVault there. And when SmartVault was being created as a product, getting into that, the default model of getting into that channel was effectively to create a partnership with SmartVault with Intuit, where they share a small portion of that revenue. And we've kept that, because that relationship is so important to us for SmartVault, we've kept that over the years. Really, it's only Intuit that we have any significant integration fees with.
Hi, Paul. Just looking at Virtual Cabinet, can you talk about the sales cycle with some of the large accountancy firms, you know, number of users, average contract value, how that's grown, you know, taking, let's say, Crow as an example. And do you find that you know, they'll start off with a trial base of users or grow over time, that dynamic? And I've got a second question, which is what's the end game?
Great. That's a very philosophical and broad question. So focusing first of all, so I don't know the particulars of Crow, but I can tell you what generally the sales cycle is like for Virtual Cabinet. So you'll find Virtual Cabinet at many of the accounting and professional services events over the course of a year. We also use sort of, you know, a digital marketing list and that sort of thing to create those initial leads. But the marketing function for Virtual Cabinet is relatively light compared to SmartVault. And we find that's because it is a more sophisticated product. It needs more of an on-premise demo with someone face-to-face, ideally, or potentially over the web, to really show the value of the product. So from getting that initial lead, which might be a trade show business card, to converting to a sale, could be anything from a few weeks to many months. And sometimes we do deals where the initial contact might have been years ago. So it's a very long lead cycle compared to SmartVault, which is much more, where there's much less inertia in it. In terms of the people we sell to, that will vary on the sort of accounting firm we sell into. So it might be the accounting part, it might be the practice partner. There could be a specific IT department. There could even be, in some of them, procurement departments, which is always less fun than selling to an IT function. With small bookkeepers, it will just be the person, basically. In terms of user sizes or account sizes, the average for Virtual Cabinet is about 20, but that range is north. So we've got single user firms, we've got many, many hundreds of user firms as well. So it's a much more smart, Virtual Cabinet is a much more flexible product in that it can work down here, it can work up here as well. Can you be more specific about the end game question?
Sure. Why should someone invest in this company to get a 5-10x return?
Great question. Okay. So what I'd say to anyone is invest on the current businesses. They're proven. You know, we've got a proven track record in Virtual Cabinet. It continues to grow. It's got very strong operating leverage. SmartVault is a very arithmetical scale-up business at the moment. So we know that we have very predictable LTV to CAC ratios. We can put a pound in. We know that over the course of that customer, it'll be somewhere between £4 and £6 that we get back. So that's a very nice position at the moment. You need to be comfortable with those two businesses as the core of what we have. And then we have a bet on the future, effectively, which is get busy, where we're trying to go after effectively a horizontal market rather than vertical markets. The potential market is huge, but you know, it's a product that has generated, you know, you probably have in your wallet more cash than that product has generated so far. So it's unproven, but we're going through a proven SaaS method of determining whether a product is going to be successful. What we don't have yet is the answer to whether that's going to be successful. So that's effectively our bet on the future.
Paul, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.